ladies, and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfinkel of Project 613 here in Chicago without a live studio audience, but it's okay, it's Hanukkah. We have the extra joy of Hanukkah that is accompanying us on this journey called Monday Motivation. We have a really very special episode for you today. And one of the reasons is as follows. We have the launch of Project 613's Mensch of the Month. Yes, it's an exciting idea that we've had for a while, but decided to actually implement it because we have so many amazing people involved in our program. And I don't know about you, but I've gotten, dozens, if not, lots of dozens. I don't know if it's over 100, but it's close, of emails from different organizations, and they're all holy and beautiful and wonderful. And sometimes you get, we've fed thousands of meals, which we have. We've hosted thousands of students, young professionals, which we have. We've impacted hundreds, more students, young professionals, we have. And at a certain point, the numbers get a little gaudy. You can't even, it's like, the American budget. It's at a certain point, $36 trillion in debt just doesn't even mean anything anymore. So we decided that we wanted to focus on some very, very special people. And God willing, we'll be able to keep this up once a month of the Mensch of the Month. So for January 2025, we're launching right before the new year. We want to honor our amazing Project 613 participants. And the first one we are truly honored to say is none other than Jacob Custer, who's been with us for many years and has done our learning programs and still does them, and our travel programs and our Shabbos programs, and has really grown as a Jew, as a person in Torah, in his knowledge. And we feel very close to the entire Custer family. His brothers, Max and Aaron, obviously his parents, Todd and Vicky, just wonderful, wonderful people. And want to give them a big shout out. And Jacob sort of represents, in our minds, really the best of what Project 613 does. Empowerment through education. Teach the next generation how awesome it is to be Jewish. Not just rah-rah. Not just, feel-good Judaism. Teach them. They are intelligent people. If you give them content, they will respond. And so the link to the video interview is in the description of the podcast. And eventually, those people listening to this very early on Monday morning may not have the audio, but I hope to upload it just a little bit later of the interview that we did for Mensch of the Month. So a big shout out and mazel tov to Jacob Custer for being the inaugural Project 613 Mensch of the Month, and stay tuned for other exciting Mensches to come. To answer the question, yes, Mensches can and will be women, don't worry. And we're planning, our only issue now is we have so many amazing people as how to decide who goes next, and God willing, we'll get to everyone. All right, so we are in the middle of Hanukkah, and it's just so special, Hanukkah, and I want to say a few Torah ideas, and then I want to tell some stories, because, there's nothing like stories to bring home a lesson. And Hanukkah sometimes gets maybe a little bit lost in the tinsel of the days of the Xmas period, of the happy holidays greeting. Yes, happy holidays. It all morphs and melts into one chulent, one big mixture of general American joy. And ironic is, those of you who listened last week, Hanukkah has a glow of its own, very distinct from the tinsel of Xmas, but a deep glow of holiness, a deep glow of joy of being Jewish. And that is what the theme that we are going to continue on tonight. I want to share with you, because I always like, it's a very Jewish idea to ascribe credit to ideas from where you got them. And, you know, there's no shame in Judaism of quoting from who you're drawing, and actually just the opposite. It says that you bring redemption to the world when you quote. So a lot of the ideas I have seen, but it were packaged in such a beautiful way by Rabbi Yaakov Denishevsky, a real bright light of the Jewish world today, whose mission is, well, many, is an incredible therapist in his private work. In terms of his Jewish teaching, he put out a pamphlet called Living in the Light, Avodas HaLev, which is the service of the heart, which is his new group, his new initiative. So I wanted to quote a few things from him. And this generation is really yearning. Even people who grew up Orthodox, quote unquote, maybe even especially, who go through the motions, are looking for the inspiration, the meaning behind the mitzvahs. And there's no one better in the young generation of bringing those lights out than Rabbi Yaakov Denishevsky. So I want to give him a shout out. And I'm not going to be quoting directly, but a lot of the what you'll hear is inspired by him, and the way he packaged it was just so beautifully. Okay, so Hanukkah, let's just review again. Hanukkah, we had two miracles. We had the miracle of the war and the miracle of the lights. And when we look at the actual story, which miracle did we actually need? What miracle did we actually need? We didn't really need the miracle of the light. That was like a cherry on top. And the main thing was that we beat the Greeks. That the people who were oppressing us were put at bay. They were pushed back. And we were able to serve Hashem again. And that brings out an amazing point. Because honestly, why were we fighting in the first place? If we just would have gone along with the Greek program, we wouldn't have needed a war. In other words, we explained last week in the podcast, you know, the Greeks did not want to destroy the temple physically. They wanted to change its essence. They didn't want to kill Jews per se. They wanted Jews to be like them. In other words, so the Jews could have lived physically. The Jews, we, our ancestors, our predecessors, is it maybe a better word? Ancestors sounds like ancient. Our predecessors, these are people directly in line with us. We are their direct descendants. They could have been fine. They could have put on their togas. They could have put on their wreaths, you know, and everything would have been fine. No problem. And there wouldn't have been a war. And we would have just been Greek. But they said, no. No. I'm not going to give in. I'm not going to live an empty shell of an externally pretty life with an internal life that's hollow. I am not going to live a wealthy, materialistically successful life without an inner connection with God, with Hashem. An external life of material success only is a life not worth living. And if we can turn it and phrase it positively, the Maccabees and the Jewish people said, we want to live a life that's worth living. And that's a life with a connection to God, connection to Hashem, of doing mitzvahs, of connecting higher, to having a purpose. Because when God is our creator, that means that life has meaning and purpose, and that our individual lives have meaning and purpose. And this is the great tragedy and travesty of atheism, is that really when you go down that rabbit hole, life really doesn't have meaning because it's all just an accident. There is no divine plan or planner, and therefore fundamentally one's life and one's essence means nothing, and there could be nothing further from the truth according to the Torah perspective. And because God created us, and because God in an ongoing manner pumps energy into us and believes in us every day, and he says, go, go, I got you. God's our biggest cheerleader. And we're plugged into that, then that is a life worth living. And the Jewish people felt that so much back in the times of fighting of the Greeks that we were willing to fight for it. We were willing to give our lives for it. A meaningful and purposeful Torah, Jewish, God-centered life was a life worth living. And a life worth fighting for, and even a life worth dying for. And that's so inspiring. And I want to share with you a few stories about Jews who not only in the time of the Maccabees, but even closer to our times, who said that living like a Maccabee, that is a life worth living. Living with a God-centered purpose. Living with Torah in our lives. And the story that jumps to mind is a story that's very powerful. And I've heard it brought down by different people. And I actually found it online from actually his granddaughter. And this is a story about Rav Chaim Stein, who was of blessed memory, who was the Rosh Yeshiva, the head of the Yeshiva of Telz in Cleveland. Sadly, his entire family was wiped out, and he started all over again and built the Telz dynasty in Cleveland that eventually made its way to Chicago and has educated literally thousands and thousands of Jewish men, and the rabbis that they've educated and spun off is astronomical. And so his granddaughter, Yocheved Belsky, I know some Belskys, I'm actually related through marriage. I'm not sure if it's that one or not. I'll have to ask my mother-in-law. But here it goes. And I will read what she posted and maybe improvise or add a little bit. And she says the following. My maternal grandfather, Rabbi Chaim Stein of blessed memory, was on the run for his life with a small group of friends in war-torn Russia. This time of year in 1941, they were on a train going further into Siberia, putting a bigger distance between themselves and the Nazis who wanted to obliterate them. It was Hanukkah, and they were determined to light the menorah each of the 8 nights. Oil? Candles? Wicks? How is it possible? Each night of Hanukkah, the group, in their threadbare clothing, climbed under the train car in the blistering cold Siberian winter to scrape grease off from the train wheels and tracks. They would use parts of their clothing for wicks and small metal containers that they would find to hold the oil. They would collect tiny drops of oil and light a flame in honor of Hanukkah. And that was what happened through the first 4 nights. But then it was the 5th night. Try as they might, it was too freezing in the sub-zero Siberia. No grease or residue could be rubbed off. Despondently and with no other option, the group fell asleep. Not my grandfather, Rabbi Stein, and one friend. They were determined to stay awake, studying and learning about the beauty of the holiday. If they couldn't light the menorah, at least they would feel a connection to Hanukkah. And at this point, I remember when I heard this story from Rabbi Aaron Cutler, he said, and there's a beautiful concept, that when we say the offerings in the siddur, in the prayers, in the morning, there's a whole section where we go and we say what the korbanot, what the offerings of the day in the temple would be. It's as if we brought them in the temple, even though we don't have the offerings and we don't have the temple. And so too, Reb Chaim Stein says, if I can't bring the Hanukkah lights myself, I can't light them, and at least I'm going to learn about the lights all night, and that will count as if I brought them. And back to Mrs. Belsky's words, a couple of hours later, when it was almost morning, there was a knock on the train door. A Russian man stood there. He had two candles to sell, literally in the middle of nowhere. The joy and satisfaction they had in lighting the menorah that night is indescribable. We saw that elation. Every Hanukkah per our request, my grandfather would acquiesce and share this unbelievable story. We never tired from hearing it. His excitement and appreciation for the opportunity he had so many years ago never ever faded, no matter how many times he shared this experience. And now Mrs. Belsky goes on, and it's worth finishing her words. It's so beautiful. We live in a time of freedom and plenty. We light the menorah without fear. We have as many candles and as much oil as we need. We too must appreciate all the opportunities we have in life. Don't wait for hard times to appreciate. Be thankful. And then she posts the page in her grandfather's diary where he writes up this story that happened. Now, folks, I don't know about you, but if I'm in a train in going in Siberia and I'm on the run from the Nazis and I am scraped off oil every night for the first four nights, and the fifth night, okay, tonight is the fifth night of Hanukkah, okay, that I'm recording this. So the fifth night, I'm out there and I'm in sub-freezing temperatures, literally, and I can't find the oil. There is a halachic concept. There is a law, concept, a Jewish law that says that onus rechmana patre, that if you are, it's beyond your control, you're exempt from the mitzvah. And I would go back and tuck myself as warm as I can in that train car and go to sleep. And Rav Chaim Stein said no. Because a life without the Hanukkah menorah is not worth living. That the mitzvahs and the connection to Hashem, that's what a life worth living is all about. The mitzvahs are our days, they are our nights. The commandments, the instructions of Hashem that he wants from us, these aren't just good ideas like the New York Times says, you know, suggestions. This is the divine wisdom telling us, my beautiful children, this is a meaningful life. This is what I want from you. This is what it's all about. And there's so many fun things going on and distractions, and God bless. But if we miss these Hanukkah lights, people say, oh, it's a small mitzvah. It's not a small mitzvah. If I hear one more person say it's a small mitzvah, it's not a small mitzvah. It's a huge mitzvah. As we explained before, there were thousands of times in Jewish history when we were saved from the bad guys. But Hanukkah and Purim were established for generations, forever, by the rabbis, because there is an eternal message that is live and well and relevant for all generations, meaning that Hanukkah and Purim speak to us. And it's not a small mitzvah. It's a huge mitzvah, because it tells us that the glow and the holiness of the Hanukkah lights are that which is worth living for. It's worth sacrificing for. It's worth giving everything for. So God willing, this Hanukkah, it's not too late. If you haven't lit, you can light again Monday night through Wednesday night. And if you've lit and then let go, then start again, because it shows Hashem And it shows you, yourself, that this is a life worth living. God bless. And God willing, next week, we'll see you again right back here for another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. And stay tuned after the outro music. We're going to have the audio of the Mensch of the Month, the inaugural one, honoring Jacob Custer. Hi, everyone. We are live here. Actually, we're not live, but this is a momentous occasion for us at Project 613, launching a new series, a new way to highlight the amazing people that we have in Project 613 here in downtown Chicago with a brand new series, really to honor our amazing participants. And the very first one for our Project 613 Mensch of the Month Award, can we call it an award? I think we call it award.
Yeah.
Sure. Honor is Jacob Custer.
Thank you very much. It's great to be honored with this honor.
Well, as we were schmoozing before, the staff, when we were going down, were saying, well, who's going to be the inaugural Mensch of the Month? And we're like, okay, obviously Jacob. Okay, now we'll make the list. Okay. And Jacob, you've been a blessing for Project 613. The Garfinkel family, the Marcus family, the entire Project 613 family. And so now we're going to, this is like a real live interview over here.
Great.
We want to know the secret sauce about what makes you tick and your personal story, life story, family story, and also your Project 613 story. Okay.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Okay. And you are innocent until proven guilty.
Okay.
Okay. So Jacob, tell us about yourself. How did you grow up? Where'd you grow up? Tell us maybe a little bit about your family.
Yeah.
And then I want to ask you about your family story.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm from Buffalo Grove. I have two brothers. And my parents, you know, we were raised in a reform household. Actually, my older brother, we attended a conservative synagogue in Buffalo Grove. And then for me, we shifted to a reform synagogue called Beth Or. And that's where I was bar mitzvahed.
So I did. So you were bar mitzvahed?
I was bar mitzvahed, yeah.
Wow, that's already a cut above. Good for you.
I'm like, I don't know how many jokes I can make here. I was going to say reform.
Make as many jokes as you can.
Reform people get bar mitzvah too. although I picked my Torah portion, which I later learned is not the generic situation, but it's fine. I got bar mitzvahed, and so I went to Sunday school, bar mitzvahed, and I think like the story that you see with a lot of your students, it kind of ended there for me. From a Jewish standpoint, but Judaism to me, I always would say, oh, I'm the funny Jewish guy. Like that was my brand in high school and like funny Jewish, like that's how I connected.
So in high school, that's how they knew you. Yeah. Jacob was the funny Jewish guy.
Yeah. And that's how I viewed myself too. Like, well, I'm funny because I'm Jewish. I don't know why those things went together. I also had an afro when I was bar mitzvah. It was like this big.
Really?
And I can show you that picture.
I think, should we make that the cover picture of this?
That would be pretty good for your marketing.
Could we Photoshop Rabbi in there with my arm around you with the?
You should. Okay, it's some amazing photos actually.
Okay, we could figure that one out. That's amazing. Like, but you already kind of knew that you were unique because you were Jewish.
Oh yeah, I always felt that. Like, why am I Jewish? Everyone else is Christian. Like, what is about me that I'm Jewish? Like, I did not know what that really. I knew something was there. But I think for a lot of Jewish people, because for Buffalo Grove High School too, which was, I did not go to Stevenson.
Okay.
It's always the first question I get. There was not a lot of Jewish people there. I know people might sound surprised hearing that, but you're talking about Stevenson as a larger percentage of Jews. So I'm just, my high school is not as Jewish. And so there wasn't a lot of us. And so I'm saying I felt unique in that way.
That's amazing. That actually is amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us, you know, and our families are close. You know, we've had the Custers over and we...
You've met my aunt and cousin.
From Arizona and the whole thing. And tell us, there's a really unique story about how your grandmother, is it?
My great-grandma.
Your
my
great-grandmother. Please tell us about it. It's really inspirational and your take on what that means.
Yeah. So So my great-grandma, my mom's side, her name's Maya Kalinsky, May. And she, you know, I heard the story of how she even came to America. So she's from Titiev, Ukraine. And unfortunately, I'm not amazing with the history, but in 1919, 1920, there was a Russian Revolution. There's a lot of, I think it's the Cossacks, or they came and they just started killing Jews and all of the, these were the Russian pogroms. I would grow up and my grandma had this picture of her grandma's family on the wall. And we always would look at this because it would be like this little girl was like five and then all these people on the wall, and they had all these like crazy outfits. And we would always say, oh, did you know that they all died the next like hour after that was taken or something, like the next like few hours or day. And they, I don't know, maybe they took a family photo before the pogroms happened. They knew, I don't know the exact history, but my question was, how did she go? She survived the pogroms, and then like how?
And
did
she was the only one.
She also had, I think, a brother or a cousin. There was like someone else. Her mom died in the pogroms, and then I don't know the full story, but she somehow made her way like across the ocean to, I think it was Canada first, and then the United States. They went to Cleveland, which was where my grandma was born, and then we've been in Chicago since the 1940s.
Wow. So what does it mean, like feeling like a survivor of this, and that your family story?
I think the word miracle is fair because, I mean, how did she survive? Like all these people died in that small town, and she survived, and then that means that I'm alive down the line. And she I'm a Russian. It's weird because when I meet people who like their family came here more recently, I'm like, well, I've been here for a long time, but it's just this weird feeling of, you know. Like, I just came here earlier, but I have a deep connection to Chicago. Like, but you know, it's just, it means a lot to my family. That story, my dad's side also came from Russia. So it's like everyone came to the US from Russia, I guess.
I joke, we're all from Russia. Depends which century we came, but we're all from Russia.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my family, my father's 1906 pogrom.
Yep.
Killed my great-grandfather. My great-grandmother took four boys and somehow got through Ellis Island, and that's the rest of the story. So tell us about any hobbies you have. Tell us about Jacob's single. Okay. Maybe. Thank I don't
you.
Know.
No,
oh,
I am.
Yeah,
so
I am.
You.
Okay, fine, ladies. Okay. Okay. So, Jacob, tell us any hobbies.
Yeah, so the biggest one I usually say is I've always been a musician. Like, I play the tuba. It's a big instrument. I know you. Oh, is it bigger than you? Yes, tubas are very big. It's always a question people ask me. And so I played the tuba since I was in sixth grade, and I'm 29 now. So it's been quite, you know, maybe 13, you know, 14, 15 years or whatever. And I still play to this day. It's a community band in Lincoln Park. And I go to the Chicago Symphony Orchestra all the time.
Like, that's amazing.
I go by myself. Like, I'm going tomorrow. I went last week. I bring my parents. I bring friends. I'm very so connected special. To, and by the way, a lot of these composers were Jewish,
yes.
As you should know.
Okay, that's maybe a show for another time, but yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of music and Judaism and connection. Okay, so your bar mitzvah, you're done with your Judaism, check the box. You go to college. Tell us, what is your Jewish experience in college?
So I went to Syracuse as a freshman because I really wanted to do the communications program there. And I went, someone had recruited me to go to trying out to be like a representative of, I believe it was just, I forget the different Jewish organizations. Mm-hmm. There's tons at Syracuse, by the way. I tried it. I didn't like it. I didn't do it. I maybe went to a dinner once. And then I ended up transferring to community college. I didn't do anything Jewish my sophomore year. Transferred to University of Illinois, which is where I graduated from. And for whatever reason, I didn't do Jewish programs in college, which, thinking about it now, oh, I missed one thing. I actually tried BBYO in high school, but I didn't like it. Okay. And I went to Camp Shai when I was younger, and I also didn't like it. I don't know. I just didn't feel connected to those things. So, and we'll get to like 6:13 later, but yeah, I didn't do anything in college for some reason. I don't know why.
So you come, you're in downtown Chicago, burbs, and then downtown Chicago after graduation. And what's the Jewish vibe?
What's going on downtown?
Well, most people, I would say, who are reform or not as observant, usually go to a lot of the young professional networking events that are not tied to anything, usually Jewish United Fund or Young Leadership Division. I did like LEADS, so I'm sure people right. here know what LEADS is. I led it a few times. I was also in a group, made friends there, but it sort of becomes a little, like, over time, it's like, I've done this a few times. I'm not, it just, that stale is a, whatever, it's kind
of
stale.
Right, no, LEADS is an amazing program. A lot of people come to us after LEADS and they want a more taste of Judaism. But
I'm
we have
part
a
of
ton
that.
Of our people. There's a lot of overlap with YLD, JUF. So, okay, how'd we meet?
Well, but I just want to say what you just said please. Is the exact funnel. Like, they come here because they want to learn more about Judaism. And those programs are good for connecting you to Jewish friends, of whom I'm still friends with today. But it didn't get you to the deeper level, which I think starts to hit in your mid to late 20s of like family and those types of things. So those, you know, it's that same thing probably happens all the time of who ends up with you is because they did that. It didn't really whatever. And then now they're here.
We have seen that people, even though we have a huge population now, 22 to 25 of recent grads, you know, a lot of our sweet spot is that 25 right. and beyond, when they've been out for a year or two, they say, wow, I'm living the dream. And the dream isn't as fulfilling as they said it was going to be. So what is there? Why am I working so hard? What is it all about? And that's really a beautiful sweet spot.
So the way I met you is through one of your barbecue events, I believe. But I also had a friend, and somehow I ended up on your mailing list. But I didn't.
Should I do the demonic one?
Well, I know you're always like, who's reading these emails that you spend probably a lot of time creating, which are good emails. But I am a huge travel person. Like, before I met you, I had been to Japan and I studied abroad in Spain. And I love travel. So I think the subject line of one of these emails, because I had been on the list for a while maybe, but it's something about a trip to Poland. Was it
to Morocco?
To Morocco. So Morocco came, yeah, I know. There's a little
story there.
Story there, but to Morocco, and so I was like, oh, that, you know, that sounds interesting. But there was a specific line actually that caught my attention more so than anything that said, you rhymed the word Deloitte somehow with like Detroit, right. and then also the word Beshirt was somewhere along there. I worked for Deloitte at the time, and I was confused because I was like, is he writing this at me? I thought you were like, you knew who I was. I was like, I'm going to write this so Jacob notices. Like, if you work at Deloitte, you'll meet your Beshir and she'll be from Detroit. It was something like that. And I was like, well, I do want to go on a trip. So I think I signed up and then the rest is history. And I've basically been a consistent attendee of your program since that point in time.
It's amazing. Can you imagine if I would have picked another company to rhyme that rhyme?
Never would have happened.
Well, I'll tell you, I started with Detroit because we were going with the young professionals from Detroit and Houston as well. So should I do Houston? I'm like, no, Detroit. What rhymes Detroit? Deloitte. So it was great. I read a little poem. We'll have to dig up that email.
Well, also what's weird about Poland, and I know we didn't get into that, but we get there and the first thing you see in Warsaw is a big – the tallest building says Deloitte on
it. It was like, it was a message to you. Yeah. So amazing. So we were going to go to Morocco. This was post COVID and you had been already for Shabbat at that point and then started to come to learn, you know, our weekly learning sessions. And then we were ready to go to Morocco. We were post COVID sort of. And then all of a sudden, I think it was called Omicron. Was that the deviant virus, whatever,
in the winter.
Happened? And then literally 2 weeks before, Morocco closes their skies. And the amount of planning that we had put into that, it was, and everyone. So I call it the great pivot. And it was to your testament to you. There were six out of like 14, I think, 14 or 15 of our people made that pivot. I called up a friend who was running a trip to Poland, of all places. So like, you want to go to Poland? Like, Morocco. And you went.
In the winter. Dead of the winter.
And tell us about that.
Yeah, so you said, hey, does anyone want to go to Poland instead? And there was this kind of, I don't even know the right word to use, but this ominous WhatsApp voice message. Like, oh, you forwarded it to us. And some rabbi is kind of like not talking directly into the microphone. It's like, well, you know, Poland is a good, it's a really good trip. It has its highs, it has its lows. And I just was like, I kept thinking, like, I don't know if I want to do that. Like, it's gonna be cold. But I think part of me
was,
I was curious, though, of course, of like Auschwitz and these camps, and I've heard about people who've gone. And yeah, I said sure. And the people who went on that trip, I mean, even to this day, we're very close friends, like India and Melissa.
100%. Yeah. It was almost like the fiery furnace. Like you put the clay in raw and it comes out and something beautiful is made. But it really, that group of people is very, very special.
Well, and something I just forgot to mention, I went to Birthright when I was actually in college, mm-hmm. in like 2014, 2015. And I've told you before that I felt connected to Judaism, but I didn't feel connected than when I went to Israel, or sorry, to Poland.
Right. Interesting. There was something about the Poland experience.
Yes, Poland, and you can ask my mom, and she'll back that up. Like, Poland is the spark for me, for whatever reason. I do remember some epiphanies I had on that trip of why I felt that way. But I don't, and I'm sure Israel is great. I want to go back sometime soon, but there's something about that experience that was unique.
I think it's when you come face to face with, they want to destroy us. So why are we here? And how we resisted spiritually, and how they've always wanted to take us out. So it forces us to ask the question, like, so what are we here for? What is so important about us? And I remember feeling it fired me up.
Yeah.
It fired me up. They want to take us down. And since then, it's only gotten worse.
Worse, right.
And we're it gives us like that fight, you know? So I think that's one of the reasons why Poland is so impactful.
Yeah.
Okay. So we did Poland because we pivoted. And then the next year, we got a chance to do Morocco itself.
Right.
And then the next year was October 7th. So it was literally the one window that we could do it. So give us a little bit about Morocco.
Morocco was interesting. So the Jews were expelled from Spain in 1492. Some of the Jews went just to Morocco, is like just across the Gibraltar Strait of Gibraltar or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so there was a large Jewish population there for a long time. And we went and we learned this whole concept where after Israel was open, a lot of them left in a very short period of time to Israel from Morocco. But this rich history about how close the Jews were with the king, and just the different places. We went to a town where it was like we met the last Jew of the town. I mean, it was both like nice but sad. The country, it was very different. I mean, this is not a Jewish country.
Right.
But the history was very cool. We went to some old synagogues and things, and we went to an old
mikvah. The dancing and the singing in these old synagogues. Well, we were the last ones in Fez. We were the Jews. There hadn't been, you know.
Right. We had done that in Poland, too. This idea of, you know, being the first person to, the first group of Jews to dance in, like, a synagogue for, like, 75 years. No one had done it. And I really connect with that type of activity.
Amazing. We did that, right? Did it in Poland and in Morocco. Amazing.
Yeah.
That was a great trip also. Really spectacular. Okay, we got to get back to traveling. Okay, we're going to get to a travel experience in a moment. Tell us... Now, another thing you've been involved in is our weekly programs, our Shabbos in the city, which has been amazing. But Shabbos in West Rogers Park. Give us a little bit about Shabbos in West Rogers Park, because I think that's a hump that people have to get over.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you've said it before. Like, by the way, for people listening still.
they're listening.
Yeah. I was very resistant, as many people are, to really anything, I think, that you were telling me at first, because – I just was like, what does he want so bad from me? Like, I've never met somebody who is so consistent in their outreach. And I was like, he cares more about something that I'm missing here. Like, I don't know what it is. And so, you know, I just, over time, that changed, because I was like, no. And then it started to change. And I think Shabbat does help with that. Like, going to West Rogers Park, meeting the families, and just like, these are your family. Like, you know, these are people who are slightly more observant than you, but they have a different lifestyle. So the Shabbats have been very great when I've done them.
It's amazing.
They're
Just so people understand, like, Chicago, downtown is where the young professionals live, and then about a 30-minute, sometimes even more, drive to West Rogers Park is where the Orthodox Jewish community is.
And right.
I tell you, I'm very unpopular because everyone walks around and say, hey, why don't you send me guests? You don't realize what a commodity you are. People really want to have you, and it's...
And I don't think anyone really realizes that there's all these people who want to host you. They want to make you food, and it feels weird at first. You're like, do I owe them something? Like, where do I pay?
You're just part of the Jewish people. That's it. That's like, the bottom line. It's the love of the Jewish people for each other.
Yeah, and so at first, it's a weird experience, and then you're like, wait, I actually like that, and I like the food. I like the music. I like the people. I like the traditions. It's a very powerful thing to do, but it is a lot. Like, you can't use your phone for 24 hours. If you've never done that, that's kind of, or just walking around in general.
Although there's no FBI agents checking the phones. We make it like a challenge.
No, it's actually to a point where you're like, oh, I actually did it. Or I actually did turn my phone off. And also just walking around in a neighborhood where people are, as you said, like, I actually talked to my neighbors, right? That's your big jokes. Like, I mean, we don't really talk to our neighbors.
And I hope they're not watching.
When we were, no.
The neighbors aren't watching.
No, and like being able to walk around and say like, good Shabbos, and people say that, it's a very cool environment to be in.
It's amazing. Yeah. Amazing. I realize that this interview needs to go on much longer, but we have to bring it in for a landing.
Sounds good.
But Shabbos in the city we haven't talked about, but we'll skip that. But having a center downtown.
Yeah, very important.
In general, how important has that been? I mean, for, you know.
Very important. This is very close to my apartment, right? And one of the problems is like, some of us don't have a car. A lot of us in Chicago don't have a car. So like to come here is much easier than to go to West Rogers Park. I mean, so you're like, fine, you don't want to come to West Rogers Park. We'll bring the Shabbat in West Rogers Park to you. That's been a very great thing for a lot of people. It's so nice. We have a lot of Shabbats as young professionals that we're like, which one do we go to? And so it's there's a lot of good programs
amazing.
Out there.
Bringing the shtetl, the chud.
The center, just to plug your center, we do tefillin club here. I do that. I've gotten a pair of tefillin through 613 that I put on. I put it on earlier today before an interview. So yeah, I mean, it's like a very great center to have.
Amazing. Okay. Two last questions. How is your life different now? What is your bump up? You've been involved in Project Dream many years. You're officially the mensch of the month.
Yeah.
What's different now?
I think maybe this is a lot for people, but like I was pretty much atheist till I was like 24, 25. I mean, my mom can back that up. I was like, I say like I'm agnostic or I'm like atheist because I didn't have any connection to it. And then once you kind of accept the idea of like something is out there, and you tune in to like, well, what did our ancestors do? And it's a very unique thing to actually believe that like God is real. And it's so shocking if you're like unfamiliar with any of this, because you're like, what are you talking about? And I have all kinds of discussions and arguments and, you know, that's the changed version.
So you have a relationship with the Almighty. I think that's a big bump up.
Yeah. I mean, that is a bump up.
Okay. Final word. What would you tell someone scared to death to do things Jewish in downtown Chicago? They just graduated college or they've been out for a while.
Yeah.
You know, huge anti-Semitism. We didn't even go into the whole October 7th thing. But like, what would your 30-second pitch be to get involved?
I mean, I would approach it, and not even from a religious standpoint, right? Like, you connect more with other Jewish people than you may realize. And if you don't have a big network of friends, or you know, you want to connect more with people who are like your background, you should come to programs like these. And then, you know, you'll enjoy, drinking wine while reading reading the Torah or eating brownies while reading the Torah.
And they're clean. Our brownies are clean.
Yes.
They're clean. No additives. No vegetative additives. Okay,
they're very, very good brownies.
Rabbi's reputation's on the line over
here. But I mean, the wine and brownies combo really makes Torah reading, you know, very nice.
Exactly. The schnapps over there, the whiskey is also pretty good. Okay, Jacob, we are thankful for your involvement. It's a real blessing that you're part of. When I say the Project 613 family, it really is. We really feel like it's a family. And you're the inaugural mensch of the month.
Thank you.
And we're just so grateful for your involvement, your family's involvement. And we're looking forward to many, many more great years together.
Sounds good. Thank you, Rabbi.